having that kind of honesty and that kind of integrity. And hardworking and being dependable. Clearly, people of good reputation, you can count on them. They're responsible and they're dependable. All right, so we're going to pray about this for our kids. Why do we need to pray about this when it comes to our kids? Well, because they're up against a lot. How about this? What comes naturally is not taking responsibility for themselves, right? Especially when it comes to their failures. Certain personalities especially are so aversive to owning up to any kind of fault. It's going to take supernatural intervention for them to get to the place where they can embrace that, right? But without that, they can't be really responsible, and they're not going to be super dependable. Other personalities be like, they won't even put themselves out there so that they can never, potentially have to own up to messing up. Again, well, that person's probably not going to step up the way they need to have a really winsome character. So we need to pray, that they would be honest people of integrity. And here's the other thing. The culture values entertainment and leisure and not work. The culture that your kids are growing up in, it's astounding to me. I, just by happenstance, picked up this book at my library. It's called Raising Men, Not Boys. It's by somebody I'd never heard of. His name is Mike Fabarez. I don't know. He's a pastor somewhere. And it turns out this book is super solid and very helpful, and not just, I think, about raising boys, but also about raising girls. But he makes the point in here how in our culture, work is seen as a ugly reality that you have to live with. What you want to do is you want to work the least amount of time you possibly have to so that you can do what really matters, which is be entertained and have all kinds of leisure. And from a biblical perspective, we'd argue that's probably a little bit upside down. We're created in God's image. The idea of accomplishment and working hard is stamped into us. And so, yeah, we want to enjoy leisure. We want to enjoy entertainment. But we want to do that so that we're refreshed, so we can go out and be productive as God's calling on us to be productive. That's a lot that our kids are up against, so we're going to need to pray about these things, right? We need to teach them how to have a good reputation. And again, these are just some examples I thought of. We're going to need to correct them when they're lying and they're being deceitful. Again, all this is nuanced and has to do with their ages and stuff. If your three-year-old's trying to trick you by telling a lie, probably not that big a deal. But if your middle schooler is, copying stuff off the internet and calling it their own work, a little bit different, right? So we need to hold out the importance of being honest. we need to give them age-appropriate work to do, starting at a very young age. It's really important. I judged my younger sister for making her kids do their laundry when they were, really young preschool. I mean, not preschoolers, but primary schoolers. I was just like... But now I kind of look at it differently. All my kids do know how to do their laundry, by the way. Turns out it's not that hard of a thing to do. But it is a skill that you need to know how to do, and it's within reach, and it's appropriate for them to learn how to do it. This guy, I thought was really interesting. He said one of the things that they stressed with their kids at a very young age was making them begin to fill out forms. Right? Who doesn't hate that? But it is part of the world we live in. It's going to be a huge part of the world your kids live in, and why not teach them to be responsible that way? I was like, wow, that's something. And I think we need to point out the satisfaction of a job well done. Again, being created, biblically, we believe being created in God's image means there's something inherent in us because God accomplishes that God's made us to accomplish. And so when they do accomplish something, to point it out. I know you cleaned your room so that you could go ahead and get your 20-minute screen time, but wait, let's stop a minute. Look at the great job you did. Look at how great your room looks. I think there's these little pockets of joy that God has built into the world that we're supposed to be living in, and I think that we're so apt to be looking for it elsewhere that we miss that, and I think teaching that to our kids could go a long way. Modeling it, how about when we fail to come through, that we own it, right? Maybe we apologize. And I think, depending on the ages of our kids, that we we're honest about it, and we just tell them how grateful we are for God's grace. And then that like Paul says, that we don't have to be stuck, but we can, you know, put behind us and we can move forward, press on. I think that's real important, being honest with our kids when we blow it, and demonstrating to them an enjoyment of work. We don't have to pretend that we love everything that we do, but I think, again, acknowledging, you know, wow, you know, do you remember how this kitchen looked like a tornado hit it? And look at it now. I'm so glad I did that, and isn't it way more enjoyable? I think that can be ways to model it. All right. So another thing that pops up in this list for a spiritually mature person or a successful adult is that they have their sexual life in order. It's in the scripture, sometimes Paul refers to it as being the husband of one wife. But a way to think of that is that these are people who follow God's design for sexuality, that they embrace God's design and they're attempting to live their life along those lines. And we could spend a whole morning doing that. And the truth is that's been done here on more than one occasion. So I don't want to spend time with that this morning. There's lots of resources about that, about how to raise your children and how to teach them about God's design for sexuality. We now have a class for how to raise sexually healthy children. I just want to refer you to that because it's a critical area, and I don't think I need to tell you that your kids are up against a lot here when it comes to this. That's part of this profile. How about this? A successful adult is hospitable. But this word means to welcome the stranger, to welcome the stranger. And it shows up in this list for those who would lead in God's church, but this is important enough in God's mind that he calls on all people who follow him to practice this, to be welcoming to the stranger. why would we need to pray about this? Why is this such a big deal? Well, how about this? What comes naturally to your child is loving people who are like them, not the stranger, people who are like them. And Jesus, you know, he said, isn't this the most common thing in Matthew 5? He says, even the most morally reprobate people, in his day it was tax collectors, don't they love people who are like them? But for us, God's calling on us to demonstrate his love, to go beyond the people we're comfortable with and welcome the stranger. And you know, again, this is not what comes naturally to your children or probably to you either. And the culture that we live in is increasingly alienated when it comes to this. This culture does not in any way foster or value real personal relating. Are you guys tracking with me here? It's like, yeah, I'll expend myself by liking something on social media, you know, and maybe consider that relating in some way. But in terms of real face-to-face, costly relating, this is a culture that increasingly does not know how to do this and does not value it. And yet, I would argue, people are stamped in the image of God. It's what we really desire. And so God's going to call on us to do this thing that's very foreign. And it's going to be even more foreign for the world that your kids are growing up with, to expend themselves, right, to spend time and to engage with people who are not like them. So we're going to need to pray about this for our kids to actually grow up to be hospitable. What does it mean to teach them how to be hospitable? Well, here's some things I thought about. How about instructing them on engaging, taking interest in others, making eye contact, speaking clearly, asking questions of others? That's sort of the ground floor, right, of making somebody feel welcome, is to make them feel like you're interested in them. How do we do that? We engage with them, and kids don't naturally know how to do that, so it's going to be on us to begin to teach them what that looks like, to teach them how to really care about and make another person feel welcome. Discuss what they can do to make others feel comfortable in your home. So if you have a play date that's coming up, they have somebody coming over to the house, maybe asking in advance, hey, what does that friend like to do before they get there, right? And thinking about maybe how you can do that when they get there. Now, if the kid turns out to be like intractable and stubborn and awful to be with, you don't have to insist that your kid have him back over. But while that kid's in your house, yeah, I think you call on your child to go out of their way to try and extend that kind of sense of welcome and enjoyment while they're there. This doesn't come naturally. It's something that we have to teach, right? And when it comes to this idea of modeling it, I guess the obvious thing is that we need to open up our homes to others. And for some of you, I know it's like not a big deal. You know, you're the ones that invite the cashier at the grocery store over for Thanksgiving dinner. It's like, well, no big deal. Others of us, it's way more of a stretch. So I just think across the board, again, it's January. We can think about the year that's set out in front of us. Why not set a goal to grow in this area? Even for those of us who are way more socially constrained, why not, like, once a month have somebody over for dinner or something like that? If you do that, that may be like potentially 12 more times you'd have somebody to your house than you would have if you hadn't planned it out. But set a goal to grow in this area yourself and have your kids like help before and after cleaning up without complaint. Now, that without complaint part is not coming from me. It was in this book, and I thought, oh my God, that's so convicting. I think I should probably share it. So that you're teaching your kid, it's great to have people in our house, and it's actually an enjoyable thing. It's not something I'm tolerating and doing, you know, whatever, but it's something that we enjoy. And I thought that that made a lot of sense, too. So there are people with a good reputation. There are people who are welcoming to strangers, a successful adult. Additionally, a successful adult does not love money, right? Money, they have money, right? They enjoy things. They have an income. They don't live as monks or nuns or anything like that. But money does not rule their life, and they are generous. That's the profile in the Bible of a successful adult. And why do we need to pray about this? Hopefully I don't need to tell you, right? Is what comes naturally is to live for self. And again, this is something that our culture promotes not just as okay, but it's like the highest value in our culture. I'd like, you know, I hear that term self-care all the time, and I'm just like, because it's really, to me, it's just like an endorsement of just indulging yourself, right? I don't need somebody to tell me to do that. I'm inclined that way already. I think there's some personality types that are more naturally generous, some kids that are that way materially, but you can bet that they're still going to be holding on to and wanting to care for self in other ways. And so we need to pray that they learn how to give of themselves to other people. It's not going to come naturally. And again, the culture we live in teaches that money is the key to a good life. Make no mistake about it. That money is equal to security and to freedom. And it's not just something that they're going to hear about occasionally, but it's the very air that they breathe. And they're going to, and you know, I'm old. I've been following Christ for 40 years. And yet I find that this mirage is very believable still periodically. Well, if I just got a little more money in the bank, maybe I'd be able to relax more. No. Right? Jesus had such an interesting appraisal of that notion. He tells this story about the guy that it was just like so rich. It's like, I need more. I need extra storage facilities. I need more storage spaces. Then I'll be able to really relax. And what does Jesus say about that guy? He says, you fool. That is not providing you the security that you really look for. You fool, in that story, he says, your soul's going to be required of you this very night. So, but this is the world that your kids are growing up in, what they're going to have to lean against. And so we're going to pray, Lord, you know, help my kid not be a lover of money. How are we going to teach this? And again, I know you guys have experience with this. Maybe we can share this at the end. But some of the things I thought about were, we want to teach them regularly, no, money will not produce security and freedom. We want them, as they get older, to learn how to critique those things that are coming at them when they see the ad pop up, you know, for that new iPhone. We ask them, well, what is it that they're really saying that iPhone's going to give you? It's not just accessibility to people and data. It's more than that. It's status. It's popularity. We want them to critique. Well, can that iPhone really give you that? We want them, we want to teach them that money is not going to do that. We want to teach them the biblical assessment of money. We want to teach them to be grateful. I don't know how you can be a generous person without being grateful, and that's something that you have to teach. We want to teach them about the world and about God's heart for the poor. There's a million ways to do that. You can sponsor a child in a third world country where they can see their picture and learn about them. There's lots of ways to do that. But we want them to learn this world that we're living in the West, this bubble that we live in, is not the way the majority of the world is living. This is not normal. You know, most of the world lives in abject poverty, and God cares about that. We want to teach them that. And we want to have them learn to give, and we want to teach them the joy of being generous. There's joy there, you know, and we want to point that out to them, that good feeling that they have. I love that passage in 1 Timothy 6 where Paul's saying, here's what you should teach the rich people. He says, teach them to be giving, right? And he says, so that they're going to lay up for themselves a really eternal treasure. But he says also, teach them to be generous, so that they can lay hold of that which is life indeed. There's a vitality, there's a joy that comes from being generous. We want to point that out to our kids when it's happening, right? So that they learn that. And then we want to model it as well, right? How do we model it? We want to include them in family discussions about giving. When God periodically lays it on our heart to spontaneously give, maybe there's some horrible natural disaster that happens. Maybe there's some tragedy in our neighborhood. It's like God's like, you need to step forward. We share it with our kid, right, so that they know that this is going on, this is important to us. And again, we express joy when we have the opportunity to give. So, one more thing. This is the hardest one, so if you know, just fair warning. A successful adult is self-controlled. They can say no to self. This comes up in a lot of different ways. They're not addicted to wine. Luckily, deacons, the rule is not addicted to much wine. I always take comfort in that. Not self-willed, not quick-tempered. So they can say no to self. Why do we need to pray about this? Well, what comes more naturally, right, than living to satisfy whatever urge comes your way? It's kind of cute and understandable when you see the two-year-old throw the fit in the grocery store right when they don't get the candy. Not that cute or understandable when you know that, you know, your neighbor's 20-year-old is living in their basement working part-time at Donato so that they can play video games all day. Not as cute, right? But those urges, that tendency is there. We need to pray that God would help them be people that can say no. And the culture that your kids are growing up with, again, promotes this notion as a value that you should satisfy your urges, and it makes it increasingly easy to do so, right? There's access, all kinds of access to satisfying our urges, you know, not later, but right now. So we need to pray about this for our kids. We need to teach them to be self-controlled. That means telling them no when they need to hear it. This is where you're going to run up against that goal of making them happy always. They're not going to want to hear no. But, you know, no to that extra treat if they haven't eaten a balanced meal. No, you know, to that extra screen time or staying up late when you know they need to go to bed. No to driving the car when they've refused to get a job and they're not helping to pay for insurance. We're going to have to say no so that they can learn to say no to themselves. We need to instruct them about short-term versus long-term outcomes. You know, lots of times this comes up naturally with money. Yes, you can take that $2 to do the clothing in the grocery store with the stuffed animal. It'll be fun. You probably won't grab the thing, but it'll be fun. Or you can save that. You know, and maybe a month from now you can get this bigger toy that'll last longer and they'll be more fun. We need to teach them that. That doesn't come naturally to them. And we need to point out the positives of delayed gratification. Right? And so, hey, you chose. You had that big project due on Friday and you chose to not use your free time on Monday and Tuesday the way you wanted to, but rather to work on that project. How great is it that your friend called on Thursday night to do this spontaneous thing and you were able to do that because you've got that project taken care of? We need to teach that to them because it won't come naturally. And in terms of modeling, this is where it gets kind of hard. We need to model self-control. And I have to say, it means controlling our temper. For some of us, it's like, no big deal. Nothing pisses us off. God bless you. The rest of us, we need to be real about this. And we need to face this, and we need to do what we can to get some help here. Because it's going to affect our kids. So we need to get help there. We need to learn to enjoy the things that's God given us to enjoy, but not allow them to master us. Paul says, you know, I'm free to do whatever I want and to enjoy anything, food, drink, entertainment, whatever. But he says, I will not be mastered by anything. And, you know, for us, I think that's a great thing for us to model to our kids. We're able to enjoy it. But keeping that stuff in balance, man, that's hard. Anybody else here like binge watch a TV show and realize 3 hours later, oh, maybe that wasn't a great use of time? I mean, it's hard to keep this stuff in check, but it's a way we can model it. And I think where there is a struggle, not if there is a struggle for us, we'd be real about it and share this with someone close so that we don't stay stuck, but that we move forward. And I think that kind of leads me into these concluding remarks, which is, what happens when you fail your kid? Not what happens if, what happens when, right? What do we do then? How do we move forward? You know, do we let it define us as a parent? Probably as we've talked through some of this stuff this morning, you're like, I don't do that, I don't do that, I don't do that. Are you going to let those things define you as a parent? For some of us, it's very easy to get stuck there. Or others of us would be like, yeah, I don't do that, I don't do that, but, you know, I do this other thing, so I'm just going to ignore the thing that I'm failing my kid at. I want to propose a different option, and that is that we face it, but we face it with hope because we're forgiven. And realizing that we're forgiven by the God who's created us, that really is the sort of the platform for us to be able to really move forward. And it's the place of greatest hope. I love the way Paul talks about this in Colossians 2. He says, God canceled out the certificate of debt consisting of decrees against us, which was hostile to us. And he's taken it out of the way, having nailed it to the cross. It's an image here of when criminals were put to death, they listed out their crimes and they nailed it to the cross. You know, this is why they're being punished. God says that he has a list of that for all of us as well. And here's what I take comfort in now, being on the other side of the parenting thing. It's not the things that I did overtly to fail my kids, which there was plenty of that. But I look back now on the things that I didn't do, and I realize this is the things that I omitted that are on that list and are completely covered. And I'm completely forgiven for those things. I can face those things now. And when I realized them when my kids were growing up, I could face them then, and I could move forward knowing that I'm forgiven. And that's sort of the starting point for those of us who have this hope. Peter says, and he himself bore our sins in his body on the cross so that we might die to sin and live to righteousness, for by his wounds you were healed. It's the same imagery here that God takes our moral failures, including these ones that have to do with our children. He takes these moral failures and he stands in our place and he pays for those so that they're taken out of the way. They're no longer a barrier between us and him. We can be in a relationship with him that changes everything. His spirit can come live inside of us, and now we're not stuck there. We don't have to live to sin, but he can begin to change us from the inside out. It's like if you have God's forgiveness, you have the potential of a do-over. And then you have a potential of another do-over, and the potential of another do-over. So if you're a visitor here this morning and, you know, you have not embraced the forgiveness that God has for you in Christ, I would just encourage you to take him up on that offer. It will make all the difference in your relationships. It will make an enormous difference in your relationship with your children. So, just to conclude then, what happens when you fail your child? I'm just here to tell you that God's going to be gracious. He's going to be gracious in that he will continue to work on your character, which is a wonderful thing. You don't have to stay stuck. And he will keep loving and providing for your children. I don't know what that'll look like. It'll look different for all of us, but he will. One of the most wonderful ways that he does that is, you know, he provides other models, right? He fills in the gaps by bringing, it, for those of us who live in community, he brings other people into their lives who can demonstrate and teach the things that maybe we fall short on. How wonderful is that? So, that's what I got. And again, I don't know, again, a lot of you guys are raising your kids right now and probably have thought through some of these things and probably have some great suggestions about ways to teach some of these things that we talked about. Other thoughts, questions? Yeah. Sure. The guy's name is Fabarez. It's F-A-B-A-R-E-Z. I mean, I just want to just qualify. There are some things in here you're like, say what? But most of it is just super solid, so. What else? Yeah, Patty. Whoa.
This was just so great. Thanks so much, Mary Beth. One thing that I wanted to point out was my kids get a very small allowance, and I would kind of try to train them to give a little bit of it,
right?
And they got really excited about it. My mom was saying, they don't have very much money, don't make them do that while they're young.
Right.
Well, I didn't listen to that advice, and I'm glad because they both enjoy and and they get a spark in their eye when there's an opportunity to give, and they you can tell their whole countenance is excited about that. So any chances you get, I just encourage to help and other kids have done that with Hope for Hill Tribes, which is something my husband helps raise funds for. Kids have done birthday parties. Our friends have done birthday parties and said, instead of bringing present, multiple kids have said, I'd like you to give to this particular thing for these kids who don't have parents, which is so unselfish, and they'll remember that even if they fall out of the habit of giving.
Oh, yeah, they will remember that. I did that once, and my kid is still bitter about it, but, yeah, you can pull that off, yeah. But I think your point is well taken. Even if they're very, very young, and even if it's a really small amount, getting them in that habit, it's a way to live that is healthy, and it leads to success. So teaching that when they're really young, I think, is great. What else?
One of the things that I figured out with my son, because, I don't know, he just has a better way of instructing me, not in a bad way at all. I've learned a ton from him. But in apologizing, because I was trying to teach him to apologize.
Yeah.
And I realized when I would yell or something and I would apologize, I would say, but you. And it would sort of negate the whole entire thing.
Right.
And so when I would mess up as a parent in my dealings with him, I would just kind of apologize for my part and say, I'm really sorry. Will you forgive me? Not worry about that. I kind of, you know, just let it go, or said, okay, let's do this, whatever. And he actually learned how to genuinely apologize.
That's sweet.
So instead of just getting the rote, sorry, or, you know, okay, so I said it, whatever, he genuinely was able to repent.
That's wonderful.
Of his own stuff. And I don't know that I necessarily did that with my daughter, but I felt like that was really helpful to just realize when I screwed up, just to, like, let whatever he did go for now and model
That's great.
Repentance.
That's great. And obviously, it's been bearing great fruit. Because, again, I think we still want to lead them to this is the way that leads to health and vitality. We want to teach them to verbalize the word, sorry. But we want to continue to move them down that road where, no, I want you to say it. I want you to look the person in the eye. I want you to say it as though you mean it. So, good. Yeah.
Something I've been learning a lot recently. I have younger kids, but I've been learning the importance of being honest with, like, my friends on, like, my failures or my crazy thoughts and whatnot. Because then, one, I get to experience them giving me grace,
yes,
which in turn helps me understand that God gives me grace for my failures,
yes,
with parenting. But two, with being honest with people, I just love that point you made about how other people can fill in the gaps.
Yep.
I just feel like there's all these areas I'm trying to, you know, be this perfect mom, but I don't think I'm supposed to be that.
That's right.
And I've got to see family members and people in my home church speak into my kids' life or lovingly discipline them or help them with, like, some area that I just have no patience for. And it's been,
yes,
really cool to see and let other people have that involvement in our family.
That's great. I honestly don't know how you can get unstuck in some of these areas where you're prone to go back and back and back and fail in without letting other people know and being honest. Because like you were saying, then, you know, maybe they can step in there, but they can also, like, begin to pray for you about that area. They can check in with you on that area. They can laugh with you on that area, you know, so that you're not taking it so seriously. So I just, I don't know how people do it without community. I've told this story before, but when our youngest was born, you know, I thought I had it all down because he was my third kid, and he cried for 6 months straight, and it really threw a wrench in my plans, you know. And I was just barely getting by with life at the time. And I remember talking to Bev one morning, and I was just like, I just don't know. I just don't know if I can keep going. And she said, "Are you drunk?" And I said, "No." She said, "Have you killed anybody?" I said, "No." She said, "Well, consider you're doing a good job," she said. And it's a ridiculous, right? It was meant to be ridiculous, but it helped me realize, you know, I'm in a horrible situation. Survival is good, you know, and having somebody, you know, like giving me a broader perspective was so helpful rather than being like, oh, woe is me and I'm a failure or whatever. So take advantage and please be real with the people that you're close to when it comes to your kids. Yeah.
I was thinking when we talked about the temper,
yeah,
it's like the hardest thing for me. And something that I've started saying to my kids, my oldest is 4, and when I've never apologized to anyone as much in my life as I've apologized to my kids. And something that I've started saying is, you know, this was wrong, and, you know, Jesus died for that. And, like, trying to bring in the gospel, like, thinking I'm teaching him, which I'm sure it is, but I feel like God has, like, used that and changed my perspective so much,
yeah,
because every day, like, X amount of times, I'm like, and you died for this, God, oh my God. I was like, thank you. And so I just feel like as much as we're talking about, like, developing our children's character, like, while I'm doing that, I'm so grateful. Like, I feel like God is, like, continuing,
that's right,
to change mine and just made that really clear to me.
That's cool. There's that book, you know, Give Them Grace, and I've read some of it, you know, and I just think this is one real practical area where you can take your kid back to God's grace is when you fail. He doesn't have to be a heavy, you know, give him a teaching or anything, but just be like, I'm so glad that God loves me and I can move forward from this. And when they fail, I just think it's the same thing. Lindsay.
So Bev said that same thing to me, too. and then she prescribed her daughter to come babysit my kid.
Oh, that's
so
good.
And the daughter actually affirmed that my kid was a total pain in the ass, so that was a blessing. But that wasn't actually my point. So hospitality, I just wanted to speak to your hospitality,
okay,
piece. So people that know me very well, hospitality is not my thing. I would love to do anything anywhere else other than my house with other people. I'm fortunate to be married to somebody who is all about hospitality. And so we have, through the years, proceeded to open up our house.
Right.
And our house has kind of become that house in the neighborhood where all the kids hang out, which drives me crazy sometimes, and I really have to pray through it. But it's so obvious how God is, like, working and people feel comfortable and parents feel comfortable having their kids come there. So I constantly, I'm not saying I'm like cured yet, but it's cool to see how God, you know, does use
right.
that. And, you know, I continue, you'll have to pray through it.
Yeah.
But it's awesome.
That's
if you stretch yourself.
Yeah, cool. There's one in the back.
I just didn't catch the verse in the character section on being generous. What was the one that talked about life indeed?
It's 1 Timothy 6.
Okay.
Verse. I'll tell you. I have it in here. Under modeling.
Well, I can probably find it from there.
Okay.
I just needed a general area. Thank you.
Sure. I have it written down. I just can't find it. That was easy.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I was wondering if you could maybe speak into helping kids that have passionate personalities a little bit more. One of my children is very committed to each feeling that he has, and I would just love some insight into helping him like honor the feelings that he has, but not being hurtful to his siblings or just letting it overrun him. And I feel a little bit at a loss.
Well, honestly, it sounds to me like you do have a good perspective. Again, I'm a librarian, not a counselor. So, but it sounds like to me that you don't want to dismiss his feelings, right? And it sounds like you're on that. But the other thing, the priority is going to be like, yeah, you feel this way, but how you treat other people matters even more, right? At least in a lot of situations, it matters even more. So yeah, you're angry and you can verbalize that, but you're not going to be able to, you know, beat on your brother or sister, or you're not going to be able to stonewall your uncle or whatever, you know what I mean? That you can feel that way, but you're going to have to find ways to care about other people. And again, you're in there for the long haul. I mean, this is going to be a hard-fought battle for your child, right? And you, as somebody coming along next to them, it's going to be hard-fought too because they are so passionate. And let's face it, sometimes those feelings are just, when we have them, it's just like, it's the only truth that we can sort of feel like is real in the moment, and they're feeling that way without the capacity to step back and realize, well, maybe I am angry here, but maybe there's more going on. So it's going to be a hard-fought and long-term battle, but I don't know, I think you're on it. You can honor and verbalize, yeah, I know that you're frustrated. Whatever. What are the other negative ones? I know you're worried. I know that you're angry. You know, maybe praying about that with them if it's an ongoing situation. But constantly taking them back to, it's not okay then to take those feelings out on other people. I don't know. Again, I'm a librarian. I am not a counselor. There might be somebody in here that has...
There's a care group, past teaching,
there you go. Bev did one on dealing with negative emotions, maybe. So I would look on the website, on the care group. There's at least one other teaching on that, how to help your kid navigate their emotions. But yeah, I guess what I really want to say is I don't think that there is an easy answer to this. I think this is going to be a hard fought thing. You as a mom hanging in there with your kid, but hang in there. They're going to be 18 or 19 sometime, and you know. You're going to want to see them have some measure of control over that. So, and they will. Yeah.
I was going to say, I can kind of really, our daughter can get really heated and emotional. And I found that, like, well, we found some tools that have been helpful for her. And she's really young. I don't know how old other people's kids are, but... she likes Daniel Tiger, and they have like a little tune about, things you can do to calm down when you're angry. And
that's great.
It's catchy, and she likes it. And so when she gets really worked up, we'll sing it together. And it does help her to take a breather for a moment, and then we can talk about the situation. We also started saying most of her conflict comes over with stuff with her sister when they're playing with toys that they want to argue about. So we have like a catchphrase that we say that the people are more important than things.
Great.
We talk about that. And the other thing we did was we made like a flow chart, which this wouldn't work with every temperament, but my daughter's like real kind of organized in the way her brain thinks. But we, you know, talked about like there's different emotions, and when we experience the emotion of anger, there's different like choices we can make about how we respond, and we had like good choices we can make and bad choices we
can
make.
That's great.
And we drew it all out. Like,
I could use one of those charts.
We have like a piece of paper, and like we'll actually pull it out and look at it, and we'll talk about like what choices are you making right now, what other choices could you make, and I don't know.
That's great.
It's different, but those have been some resources that we have tried to use.
Thanks for sharing that. That's great. Great resource.